Welcome back to the Educated Patient Podcast. Today we are here with Dr. Binlish, based out of California. Dr. Binlish is a doctor at One Medical, specializing in diabetes, obesity, and preventative care. And today's conversation is timely around the topic of childhood obesity. So Dr. Binlish, thank you for joining us. Excited to talk about this topic because it's something that's becoming louder and louder, it seems like, as the days go on. So would love for you to just open up the conversation by, I'm just curious to know how you even got into this realm of childhood obesity.
Thank you so much for the invitation and giving me opportunity to speak about such an important topic, especially since it is a Childhood Obesity Awareness Month. So I actually, being a diabetologist for almost like more than a decade now, I actually came into childhood obesity through my work in medicine. But the turning point for me was seeing how early this disease is taking its root. In clinic, I was meeting the children with type 2 diabetes. And as soon as you see them in clinic with diabetes, we first think about type 1. But no, we are looking at type 2, which was, and it was also associated with fatty liver disease, and which are something that we were not even thinking in that early age. So it made me realize that we can't just wait until adulthood to intervene, prevent, or treat this disease, but we have to take an action early. And even sometimes we have to address something before birth. So that's what drew my attention to this world. I wanted to bring the shift in this conversation from blame to empowerment and from quick fixes to long-term health, because there is a lot of misinformation and stigma associated with childhood obesity, and there is a lot of denial as well. So working with children and families, you can see the small supportive changes that can transform not only the child's health, but I think it will be entire for entire household. So that's why I really started looking into this in more in detail.
Great. I love that phrase of from blame to empowerment, because my brain instantly goes to there's many other spaces out there in the world where that's also needs to be true, not just with childhood obesity, but I can imagine how important that's been. Just on the heels of you reframing, right, and seeing this, or trying to be a champion of this trend shift from blame to empowerment, I'm curious just to hear about some other trends that you've seen over the past decade, specifically working with this.
So we are actually seeing pediatric obesity to be rising at alarming rate right now. Nearly one in three children, they may have obesity by age 2050, which is a huge number. And what is more striking is that we are all are actually dealing with the kids growing. Like we always say that it's a baby fat. So it is not. It is basically a chronic disease that needs attention early. So some of these, that's the reason I feel that why this denial to basically accepting this fact of having a childhood obesity and addressing it early is, I think, the main thing that I feel that has to really be addressed as soon as possible. It is not about the weight. It's actually overall health. So I think we can go over more in detail about the empowerment, but what I feel that denial, blame to empowerment is that addressing the denial early age to bring the patient to the, bringing people to the right steps forward towards their health is the most important. And that has to be early on, not later.
How, from your work with these children, how much of the, I don't want to use the word blame, but how much of the variable in play here for those that are eventually being diagnosed, let's call it, with childhood obesity is due to the family dynamic variable?
So childhood obesity does not just get affected by weight today, as I mentioned earlier. It sets the stage for child's future health. So kids with obesity are at higher risk for heart diseases, diabetes, liver disease. But why? So there is a significant social impact. So you would have heard about bullying. Social media bullying is real. Not only that, other bullying, low self-esteem, stigma, and actually, I think in adolescent, especially what we have seen is that they do not want to address it, or they think that it might be a mental health issue, or it might be, they will be just putting it on the some other causes, or but just not addressing that these are the factors that is actually impacting the mental health, that is basically causing, like, for example, a binge eating disorder or nighttime eating syndrome, some of those things which are not even aware, like this. That's why it is so important that families has to feel deeply about this, talk about it, which is why the conversation is just not about the numbers on the scale. We have to really start from the grassroots level. And we have to, first thing is to build the trust, to get the right question or right information from the patient, build the confidence, and also build the self-esteem. So until unless we do all those things together, so and for all of this, especially for the child, family dynamics is so important. So what atmosphere they're bringing up, what are they going through, what are the sources they have where we are seeing these, which might be causing these low self-esteem behaviors. So those things has to be addressed, which I think in such a dynamic and fast-paced world, I think get missed quite often.
You mentioned the grassroots, right? And the number beyond the scale. How much of a challenge is it for you to navigate helping a child make better decisions or reposition some of these grassroots variables that are going on that are leading to this, when in reality, a lot of the decision-making is also has to involve parents, guardians, yes, or those that are socially around them?
Actually, you brought a very interesting point, and I do see that a lot, usually even in the practice, day-to-day practice. And below age 18, still the parents come, we can talk to them. But even that age 18, 19, it's very hard because now this they think that they are adult, but they're still going through that same mindset, still not grown that much. So when we talk about childhood obesity, we all are very stuck with the scale and or the BMI. And, you know, a lot of the body shaming or a lot of the low self-esteem comes from the body dysmorphic disorder. Like, I'm maybe using a big term, but it is like the way you look. So that basically impacts a lot for the patients. That's why it gets very difficult sometimes to explain that it's okay to not be obsessed by the scale. And I think that that is still work in progress. I will not say that we are already there. We tell them that we look at your blood pressure, we are looking at your cholesterol, we are looking at your blood sugar, but it is hard for them to process this and understand, okay, these are the abnormal numbers that I have to really look into. So, and it does not actually, and sometimes you have these numbers, okay, but the child is still at the obesity risk because you don't necessarily have all the changes of, like all these numbers to be abnormal very early on, unless this disease is like really, there is a higher BMI. So two kids can have the same BMI and they can have completely a different health profile. So what we try to address is the non-scale victories. If it is like, ask them about, are you sleeping better? How is your sleep habit? How is your energy during the day? Are you more confident playing with your friends? Or is your whole family eating meals together at night? Or those changes matters more than the pounds that they lose. So that's why that understanding about when you start about talking about numbers, it's very hard to actually make the child understand what they're going through. When you talk about something that correlates with their mindset, then it gets much easier. And the conversation, and you also start building the trust because they think that, okay, we are talking about something that's practical in their life. So it's very important always. And I will not say that I am already there. It is still a work in progress. And sometimes it takes multiple visits to even reach to their level. That is why I always tell them that don't get obsessed by the scale. Scale is not the right thing. You first build the lifelong habits that you can improve and we will talk about health, not weight. So sometimes when families start focusing on those and like we collectively talk about that, it really helps the child to feel that they can come out of the stigma. There is some more motivation and then they can actually bring some changes in their day-to-day life, like smaller changes, not looking for the big changes at one time.
My next question was going to be, what's one small piece of advice you have for a parent that feels overwhelmed? But you answered that very well, and I appreciate that. One other question that came up as you were talking, I actually have three children, and so we're right in the midst of the preschool years, and I'm really curious to hear any advice that you might have for parents like myself who have children in those preschool years on first steps or some steps that they can take to help shape these whole life health patterns that we're talking about.
So that's why I was actually, I would like to tell you about our Fuel for Future project that we started actually to address some of the six pillars of lifestyle medicine in a very like an understandable way for the kids with some practical activities. But what we learned, we just launched this project and it was very well received, because what we did is like we did explain the children in their language, like what does this type of food looks like, and when you take this versus this, how does it impact? So actually, you can address this at every level, every age group. I think the major challenge right now is the impact of social media, the television, your phone, this all, the TikToks or gaming, or there is a lot of misinformation there for the children. If early on we address that and we tell children to basically address this, make sure that you have this much time for physical activity, get involved them in the sport so that they get tired, their energy level is better, and then they come back and eat healthy. Because when you are basically doing all of these together, your energy level basically remains really at the good time. Just compare it with a child who is watching a video game at night, like, or binge watching the Netflix channel for almost like up to 2 or 3 o'clock. How will be their energy level? So that is what is something that you can educate right from the time that, why are you telling this? Like, just don't, there should not be any punishment or thing, but there should be a solution that, okay, if you let us do this together, let us try to change this behavior into this behavior. So I always tell parents that don't blame the child. Don't, if they want to do some days, it's okay. But we definitely don't want it to be a practice habit. We never single out a child as well. We focus on the family environment. It's very important to collectively do it. And then every day you have to have one meal as a family. So the child understands the value of eating together. And then connection and social relationships are equally important as well. Mm-hmm. So when healthy choices are normalized for everyone, then no child feels targeted. So you cannot, they will think otherwise that, okay, somebody is just blaming me. So we definitely don't want to do that. And there is a lot of role of schools and communities as well. So I know the food in cafeterias or how they are taking, using the sodas. Those things are also very impactful. So we have to address it through community level, from school levels. Kids spend so much time outdoors, like they are mostly in the school. So we definitely need healthy environment everywhere. So education through them is important. And then always take the first small steps. So if you want to bring a change, it has to be smaller. Parents don't have to get overwhelmed, because then the child will reflect that and they will get overwhelmed. So just pick one habit. And for example, let us just have, instead of full can of soda, let's have half can of soda today. Give them in a glass instead of full can. So that itself is a big change, right, for them. So just to make them understand that, okay, let's have a family walk together today. So some of those changes really makes a big difference and helps for improving. The whole family approach is very important.
I feel like we talked a lot about food. Before we move on, I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on how early is too early for parents to start shaping their environment for movement. And how important is movement in the recipe that we've been discussing here in terms of helping push against the trajectory of childhood obesity?
I think it's never too early. It's just like as early as possible. Especially if you're acting about physical activity, then it has to be early on as much as possible. I think that there is no set time for something to start. It has to be built in right from the beginning. So, and I think that is where we are missing, because just imagine the fast-paced environment we are living in right now, which is like so much dependent on sedentary. And I think we are making our behavior more sedentary. Earlier, we used to go walk to the restaurants, get the food and come back. Now you just do DoorDash and it comes to home, and we are just, and there is no time to eat, like sit down and eat together. It may be just taking it to sitting on your table and eating. So I think those changes early on we have to make, and make sure that we are able to not do those, bring those type of changes right now. And don't implement this in your family, habit of not getting up and taking the water by yourself. Like, just have everything served on the table. Like, that's one example for that. So physical activity is also like that. So we have to have like some set time of physical activity, get them involved in the sports right early on. They build the habit of getting into the sports right in from the beginning. Have like at least 1 hour of physical activity. If that is not there, then at least like have a walk for 15, 20 minutes. So something that they know that that's part of our routine. Mm-hmm. So, and that is very easily incorporated in children as compared to adults. Adults will feel lazy, but children, if they think that I have to go, then they think it's part of my routine I have to do every day. So that's what is very important.
Yeah, I love that. One thing you made me think about when working with adults, because our environment has been shaped to make us sedentary, essentially, or make it easier to just be sedentary all day. One thing that we've done to kind of flip their thinking is we've stopped tracking steps, because, you know, so many people are like, track your steps. We actually, with some individuals, started tracking how much they sit throughout the day. And,
yes.
And just flipping that frame of thought does something for some individuals where it makes them start moving, because they can't comprehend that there's 9, 10, 11, 12 hours of sitting throughout the day.
And one more example I want to give you is about the preschool habits, since you brought that up. That's what we actually talked about and focused more, is that you need to expose the kids to a variety of colors or food and avoid any of the pressure or restriction. So when they see you enjoying the healthy foods, they come back to it naturally. So because they don't know what is healthy and what is unhealthy, they just eat what they are given, right? So that's why it is so important to basically tell. And I also came across, for example, formula food that has a lot of formulas, even have a lot of processed ingredients in there, and which, like, I think in US or anywhere in the world, we are so much dependent of formula food for some of the babies who cannot be breastfed. But it's really sad to know about that these formula foods, which has been used for many, many years, has processed foods, metals, and trace elements in there. So it is what we are feeding. So our awareness really is going to impact directly to them. So that's why I really feel that in preschool is the best time to actually build the habits.
Great. I want to switch gears in a totally different direction, because I feel like this wouldn't be an obesity conversation if we didn't bring up the hot topic of GLP-1s. And so from my just surface level knowledge, just not being an expert, but just being out there in the world, you're starting to see more information surfacing around GLP-1s being used for adolescents. I'm just curious to hear your experience with that, your thoughts on the progression of GLP-1s coming down into the younger age brackets. And some things that parents should just be aware of with that.
See, the medications are like semaglutide are definitely a breakthrough for current world. The only problem is that in the awareness about the medication is also very important. And we have to understand that it's not a silver bullet or it's not a magic pill. We have to do it along with the lifestyle. So it's just a part of a toolkit. It's not only a toolkit. So because there is a lot of nuisance about this medication, even in the adults. So I will be very careful in starting and in a page in obesity. If there is a child who already is going through obesity with comorbid condition like diabetes, liver disease, cholesterol issues, and they are really definitely a fit for like candidate for this, then yes, we should, because this also helps with the mental health. I had few patients whom I have started early on, and actually that helped with them with the food noise and night eating syndrome and those type of issues, and that definitely built their self-esteem. But the thing was that when you overdo it, then we have also gone through the malnutrition. So that balance is very, very important, and it has to be safely done. So as long as you're doing under supervision, along with your doing it very, like understanding all the potential side effects and also learning the long-term impacts, these medications definitely can work better for them. But the question is that how is this child understanding and taking this, that what is this medication doing for them? And definitely family routines and strong family support is very, very important, because it looks very reassuring to get the numbers down, getting your BMI down, and because that also helps from the body shaming and bullying. And so a lot of patients just keep doing it. But we have seen it done in a wrong way in teens, especially because this medication can take away the appetite, and that they do not understand that that does not mean that they should not eat at all. So they're going towards the wrong side. So understanding how much protein to take, how much exercise to do with that, all of that is very, very important. So I think that they are definitely a great tool to add on in our toolkit, and has shown good results, especially patients who already had the comorbid conditions or already had the abnormal numbers early on. For them, it has been definitely a great solution. But again, a lot of education is needed before starting.
In closing, I'm curious what you're most excited about in the world of childhood obesity.
I am actually excited about bringing the change early on. That is the most exciting thing which I want to do it. I really feel that prevention and your question actually about whole family approach and how to put it together in a narrative way where people can understand and build the solution is really very important. And I really also, for me, the major thing which I would like to focus is about addressing the denial and addressing the stigma. So that a lot of people who are really going through it, they come out and talk about it with their pediatrician, or family is more open to address it earlier. Families has to really open to basically make the changes earlier. We did a conference for the music festival in London where we also addressed this thing. And what we actually talked about was how music can bring importance of music in bringing the distraction from eating the food all the time. And actually there are some studies who has actually found that it really helps. So music is a good distractor. It has helped from the food noise itself. So so bringing those type of changes that will be more acceptable to the especially in that age group, or like a young age group, I think it will be something that I really want to bring on and bring those type of changes that will connect more with the children.
I love that. Dr. Binlish, where can listeners find the initiative that you discussed about going to India and the Golden State, and where can they find you if they want to find more information?
So I can give you my email. They can find me there. But I think the best way is this podcast, I think, is for Obesity Medicine Association. Mm-hmm. So my project is like a little bit separate from we can always delete this, right? This
Yeah.
part, I'm
Yeah,
just
yeah.
going to tell you.
Yeah.
So they can find me, actually, I can give my email, or there is golden gsobesitysociety.com. Major thing is that if what message we want to give is to spread it through the through all the schools. So what our, we have youth ambassadors, they are working on working in the community and going to the schools to have outreach and education. And that's what we are trying to build to different countries, like we'll basically start spreading out to different countries, like globally. But for this podcast, I think is for mainly Obesity Medicine Association, and they have their own resource. There's a journal called Pillars of Elsevier's Pillars of Obesity Medicine, where they publish the articles. They also have a pediatric algorithm where they can, this healthcare providers can go and access it and they can learn. But as a public, I think it's more of a community project that will be very, very important to spread out.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Binlish. If you're looking for more information on childhood obesity, be sure to check out theeducatedpatient.com and stay tuned for more podcasts coming in the future that align with the monthly awareness events that are nationwide, but also for topics that are very, very prevalent today. Dr. Binlish, have a great day.